Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A former advisor to President Donald Trump has released a recording she says she secretly made inside the White House's high-security situation room. The advisor, Omarosa Manigault-Newman, began serving in the White House shortly after Trump took office in January 2017. She held the positions of assistant to the president and director of communications for the Office of Public Liaison. She left her job in the White House last December. Manigault-Newman had also worked for Trump during his presidential campaign. She had known him since they worked together in 2004 on the first season of the American reality TV show, The Apprentice. Donald Trump presented the show, and Manigault-Newman was one of the people competing on it. During the campaign and throughout her White House service, Manigault-Newman was publicly supportive of the president and his policies. She had also defended Trump against accusations of racism. Manigault-Newman has now written a book called Unhinged, to be released Tuesday, about her White House experiences. While publicizing the book, she released an audio recording of a discussion she says she secretly recorded inside the White House. She says the discussion with White House Chief of Staff John Kelly took place in the highly secured Situation Room. Manigault-Newman released part of the recording Sunday on the NBC television show Meet the Press. In the recording, which the Associated Press independently listened to, Kelly is heard saying he wants to talk with Manigault-Newman about leaving the White House. Kelly said there were some integrity issues related to Manigault-Newman. The issues were related to her use of government vehicles and money issues and other things, Kelly can be heard saying. If we make this a friendly departure, you can look at your time here in the White House as a year of service to the nation, and then you can go on without any type of difficulty in the future relative to your reputation, Kelly tells her. Manigault-Newman says she considered the statement a threat. She has defended her decision to secretly record it and says she has recorded additional White House conversations that she might be releasing as well. But critics condemned Manigault-Newman for secretly recording in the White House's Situation Room. The Situation Room was created by President John F. Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs disaster in 1961, according to a paper published on the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, website. That crisis showed the need for a fast and secure communication center to handle large amounts of national security information coming in from many places to the president. Since then, the mission of the Situation Room has been to provide up-to-date intelligence and crisis support to the National Security Council and the president. The Situation Room is used by the president and his advisors to manage the nation's most important and secret foreign policy decisions and military actions. In the past, this included former President Barack Obama and his top aides watching in real time the hunting down of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. Earlier this year, the White House said President Trump met with his top advisors and held meetings in the Situation Room before the launching of airstrikes on Syrian military targets. The airstrikes were ordered to answer a chemical weapons attack in Syria. Some national security experts and White House officials say Manigault Newman may have violated ethics and security rules for making the secret White House recordings. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was quick to criticize her actions. She said the very idea that an employee would secretly record inside the Situation Room shows a blatant disregard for our national security. Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, told a morning television show Monday Manigault Newman may have broken the law. She's certainly violating national security regulations, which I think have the force of law, he said. Ned Price served as a spokesman for the National Security Council in the Obama administration. He told the Associated Press he had never heard of a more serious breach of protocol. Price said while there is no one at the door of the Situation Room checking devices, there is a sign posted outside making clear that electronic devices are not permitted. Price also questioned why Kelly would have chosen to hold such a meeting in the Situation Room. I'm Brian Lynn.
North and South Korean officials say their leaders will meet in North Korea's capital, Pyongyang, in September. The announcement followed high-level talks between representatives of both sides on Monday. Officials met in Panmunjom, the neutral village in the border area that separates the two Koreas. In their statement, the officials did not include a date for the meeting between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. Kim and Moon met in April for the first time in Panmunjom. In May, they met there again. Moon will become the first South Korean leader to visit Pyongyang if the September meeting takes place. The meeting would continue a series of diplomatic moves between the two Koreas. Tensions between the sides eased when Kim accepted Moon's offer for North Koreans to take part in the Winter Olympic Games in Pyeongchang in February. That helped lead to historic talks between Kim and American President Donald Trump in June. The two leaders met and signed an agreement in Singapore. The agreement included a promise from North Korea to work toward denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A new study from brain researchers helps explain how the human brain evolved, or changed over time, to permit people to speak and write. This new research may also help people who are learning a new language. Michael Ullman is the lead researcher. He is a professor at Georgetown University Medical School in Washington, D.C. He has been studying language learning for more than 20 years. Ullman says his research shows that the human brain does not have a special area or system for making language. Over time, he says, we have simply reused or co-opted parts of our brain for language. And those parts, he says, are ancient, older even than humans themselves.
This study examines the theoretical framework that language is learned, stored, and processed in two ancient, so pre-existing humans, learning and memory systems in the brain. And these have been co-opted, reused for language in humans.
Non-human animals have these systems too, adds one of the study's co-authors. Philip Hamrick is with Kent State University in Ohio. In a press statement, he explains that rats use the same memory systems to complete some tests. Ullman, Hamrick, and the rest of the team looked at data from 16 other studies on language. They found that people learn language using two memory systems, declarative and procedural. Memorizing vocabulary, for example, is a declarative memory process. But learning grammar is mostly a procedural memory process. Again, here is Professor Ullman.
The declarative memory in humans, at least, is what we think of as learning or memories, such as, oh, I remember what you said last night, or things like that. And procedural memory is what we often call motor memory, such as how you learn to ride a bicycle.
Or, he adds, how to conjugate verbs. These procedural memory skills become so deeply learned that we are no longer aware that we are doing them. However, Ullman explains that the two long-term memory systems can share tasks. And he adds, the adult brain uses the systems to learn language a bit differently than a child's brain.
Adult learners of a second language tend to rely on learning the grammar and declarative memory early on, but eventually they become just like kids learning the grammar, and they depend on procedural memory.
In other words, adult language learners may use their declarative memory for using grammar patterns. They think about it purposefully. For a child, the grammar may come more naturally. They don't have to think about the grammar rules before speaking. In addition to language learners, Ullman's study could help people who have a brain injury that affects speaking and writing. This knowledge can also help those who have learning disabilities, such as dyslexia. People with dyslexia have difficulty identifying words and symbols accurately. In a statement to the press, Ullman said he hopes the new research will lead to exciting advances in our understanding of language and in how both second language learning and language problems can be improved. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about life in the United States during the 1960s. The 1960s began with the election of the first president born in the 20th century, John Kennedy. For many Americans, the young president represented a spirit of hope for the nation. When Kennedy was murdered in 1963, many felt that their hopes died too. This was especially true of young people and members and supporters of minority groups. A time of innocence and hope soon began to look like a time of anger and violence. Many Americans protested to demand an end to the unfair treatment of black citizens. Many more protested to demand an end to the war in Vietnam. And many protested to demand full equality for women. By the middle of the 1960s, it had become almost impossible for President Lyndon Johnson to leave the White House without facing protesters against the war in Vietnam. In March of 1968, Johnson announced that he would not seek another term in office. In addition to President Kennedy, two other influential Americans were murdered during the 1960s. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Several weeks later, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, was shot in Los Angeles, California. He was campaigning to win his party's nomination for president. The two murders resulted in riots in cities across the country. The unrest and violence affected many young Americans. The effect seemed especially bad because of the time in which they had grown up. By the middle 1950s, most of their parents had jobs that paid well. They expressed satisfaction with their lives. They taught their children what were called middle-class values. These included a belief in God, hard work, and service to their country. Later, many young Americans began to question these beliefs. They felt that their parents' values were not enough to help them deal with the social and racial difficulties of the 1960s. They rebelled by letting their hair grow long and by wearing unusual clothing. Their dissatisfaction was strongly expressed in music. Rock and roll music had become very popular in America in the 1950s. Some people, however, did not approve of it. They thought it was too sexual. These people disliked the rock and roll of the 1960s even more. They found the words especially unpleasant. The musicians themselves thought the words were extremely important. As singer and songwriter Bob Dylan said, "There would be no music without the words." Bob Dylan produced many songs of social protest. He wrote anti-war songs before the war in Vietnam became a violent issue in the United States. One was called Blowin' in the Wind.
How many roads? woods must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
In addition to songs of social protest, rock and roll music continued to be popular in America during the 1960s. The most popular group, however, was not American. It was British, the Beatles, four rock and roll musicians from Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, I tell you something. I think you'll understand. And I say that something. I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand.
The Beatles' song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, went on sale in the United States at the end of 1963. Within 5 weeks, it was the biggest selling record in the country.
Let me hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. And when I touch you, I feel happy inside. It's such a feeling that my love,
Other songs, including some by the Beatles, sounded more revolutionary. They spoke about drugs and sex, although not always openly.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
In the 1960s, do your own thing became a common expression. It meant to do whatever you wanted without feeling guilty. 500,000 young Americans did their own thing at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. They gathered at a farm in New York State. They listened to musicians such as Jimi Hendrix and Joan Baez, and to groups like The Who and Jefferson Airplane.
Look what's happening out the street. Got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, I'm dancing down the street. Got a revolution.
Got a revolution.
Hey, little reason on the people I meet.
Got a revolution.
Woodstock became a symbol of the young people's rebellion against traditional values. Many young people called themselves hippies. Hippies believed there should be more love and personal freedom in America. In 1967, poet Allen Ginsberg helped lead a gathering of hippies in San Francisco. No one knows exactly how many people considered themselves hippies, but 20,000 attended the gathering. Another leader of the event was Timothy Leary.
Now, energy comes.
He was a former university professor and researcher. Leary urged the crowd in San Francisco to tune in and drop out. This meant they should use drugs and leave school or their job. One drug that was used in the 1960s was lysergic acid diethyl amide, or LSD. LSD causes the brain to see strange, colorful images. It can also cause brain damage.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Some people say the Beatles' song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was about LSD.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
As many Americans were listening to songs about drugs and sex, many others were watching television programs with traditional family values. These included The Andy Griffith Show and The Beverly Hillbillies. At the movies, some films captured the rebellious spirit of the times. These included The Graduate and Dr. Strangelove.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack. And so, because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying. It's simple to understand and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines.
Other films offered escape through spy adventures like the James Bond films. Many Americans refused to tune in and drop out in the 1960s. They took no part in the social revolution. Instead, they continued leading normal lives of work, family, and home. Others, the activists of American society, were busy fighting for peace and racial and social justice.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
Women's groups, for example, were seeking equality with men. They wanted the same chances as men to get a good education and a good job. They also demanded equal pay for equal work. A widely popular book on women in modern America was called The Feminine Mystique. It was written by Betty Friedan and published in 1963. The idea known as the feminine mystique was the traditional idea that women have only one part to play in society. They are to have children and stay at home to raise them. In her book, Ms. Friedan urged women to establish professional lives of their own. In the early 1960s, a committee was appointed to investigate the condition of women. It was led by Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a former First Lady. The committee's findings helped lead to new rules and laws. The 1964 Civil Rights Act guaranteed equal treatment for all groups. This included women. After the law went into effect, however, many activists said it was not being enforced. The National Organization for Women, NOW, was started in an effort to correct the problem. The movement for women's equality was known as the Women's Liberation Movement. Activists were called women's libbers. They called each other sisters. Early activists were usually rich, liberal, white women. Later activists included women of all ages, women of color, rich and poor, educated and uneducated. They acted together to win recognition for the work done by all women in America.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.